But the big question is, will we ever get a cure for cancer? I think that's a very difficult question to answer. But if I had to, I would say, no, we won't get a cure for cancer. Cancer is not one indication. It's obviously an umbrella term for more than 250 separate patient populations. And indeed, that number of patient populations is increasing on a regular basis as we are identifying new biomarkers, which can carve out new discrete patient groups. So there's not going to be one magic silver bullet which will cure cancer. And even if there were, cure is a very difficult word to use in oncology. Not only is it an emotive topic, but also cure suggests that every single cancer cell or clone has been completely eradicated. And this is very difficult to prove, especially in late stage metastatic disease. Instead, what I think we'll see is a trend from acute disease to chronic disease. And we've seen that already happen in some hematological malignancies. We will go forward from very short life expectancies to gradually longer and longer. And this will mean that some patients will remain on treatment for a very long period of time. Therefore, new issues in oncology become more relevant. Issues such as patient compliance and persistency to medication. And of course, related to that is tolerability. Hello, my name is Andrew Merrin. I'm the Executive Director of the Oncology Team here at Decision Resources Group. There is still a high unmet need of cancer treatment today. There will be 1.7 million new cases of cancer diagnosed in the US this year. This corresponds to nearly 600,000 deaths this year alone in the United States, meaning that cancer is the second most common cause of death, only behind heart disease. Clearly, there's a big unmet need here to improve care, not only for pharmaceutical companies to make money, but also clearly for a societal benefit. So we have made enormous strides in cancer care, but there's still a lot more to be done. Nevertheless, we shouldn't lose heart. Since the 1970s, there's been a near 50% increase in the five-year relative survival of cancer from diagnosis through to 5 years. This improvement is a result of increased developments in surgical practices, better diagnosis, but importantly, of course, better treatments. Some of the large indications are associated with high commercial outcome. For example, breast cancer is associated with a $14 billion revenue in 2017 in the United States and the rest of the G6. Other indications are also associated with a very high revenue. For example, multiple myeloma, approximately $13 billion. Companies really clearly want to make an impact in this incredibly commercially lucrative space. The total oncology market is approximately $140 billion, and gaining even a small slice of that will result in significant sales if the pharmaceutical company can show it has developed an efficacious drug with an appropriate standard of care as a comparator arm, and the drug is tolerated and conveniently delivered. And of course, that's what pharma is currently focused on. New therapies and developing new opportunities for patients. So that brings us neatly into an assessment of where are we today in oncology. The first thing I'd like to mention is the importance of immunotherapies. Clearly, everyone talks about immunotherapies in oncology. There's no escape the importance of immunotherapies. But I wanted to mention that data at ASCO really focused the importance of immunotherapies in combination with other drug classes and immunotherapies in combination with other immunotherapies. That's really where the future is. It's really important that pharmaceutical companies understand what is the optimal combination to use for an immunotherapy agent. Immune checkpoint inhibitors are not without flaws, and that's why we need these combinations to improve the overall efficacy and to make them applicable for indications where they're not currently suitable as monotherapies. When we're thinking about immunotherapies, it's not just checkpoint inhibitors, of course. The other really exciting class are CAR T-cell therapies. At the moment, the two approved CAR T-cell therapies had made great efficacy improvements in select hematological malignancies. But I think the real excitement for CAR T will come in the future, at least hopefully, once we can generate CAR T-cells for novel targets on solid tumours. That's when they'll really start to come into their own, and that's where clearly most commercial opportunity lies. But of course, there's a big competitive barrier to gain access into these indications, especially those which are well served with current treatments. I believe immune checkpoint inhibitors are here to stay. I think that's pretty clear. They've demonstrated some really robust data in multiple tumour types, and are gaining new approvals in additional indications almost on a monthly basis. But the future, as I've mentioned, really lies in effective combination treatments, and those combination treatments need to be very carefully analysed before getting to phase 3. The other key theme or trend that I'd like to mention, and it was also discussed at ASCO, is biomarkers. Now, obviously, oncology is the poster child of personalised medicine or precision medicine. But what's the future? Currently, everybody knows that specific biomarkers in specific patient populations can lend themselves amenable to particular targeted therapies. That's what biomarkers and personalised medicines can do. But the future, I think, lies in identifying biomarkers which are applicable across multiple different tumour types. And therefore, we can gain approval of new biomarker-driven therapies across many indications. And clearly, this is more commercially lucrative. Keytruda was one of the first to do this with approval in MSI-high and mismatch repair deficient patients. But I think there's future drugs which are going to gain the same success. The other trend that I wanted to highlight was treatment optimization. So over the last 5 years, there's been a wealth of new oncology treatments entering the clinic. The FDA has kept very busy through approvals of many new drugs. But what we still don't really have a good handle on is what is the optimal sequence of some of these treatments. How should they be used in real clinical practice? Because we know, of course, clinical trials are not truly representative of what happens in the real clinical setting. We need better data to understand in which order these drugs should be given, and also what's the optimal dose, and which patients will really benefit best from particular types of treatment. Pharma is also focused on innovation. What are the new mechanisms of action which are coming down the pipeline? We're keeping track of the pipeline, but we really need to understand which of those drugs are going to be successful. We're monitoring the efficacy and the safety of those drugs, but until we get to phase 3 trials, it's very difficult to predict which ones will actually be successful. That's why we need randomized phase 2 drugs of new therapies. It's a bit dangerous to jump from phase 1 or even preclinical data straight into phase 3. We've seen some high-profile failures recently for novel drugs in combination with checkpoint inhibitors. And we really need robust data before we launch into a costly and potentially risky phase 3 trial. Novel therapies in the pipeline need to be critically assessed. We're analysing all therapies in oncology development, and we're analysing not only those in development, but how those trials are structured. What is the clinical trial design? Clinical trial design can make or break a new therapy. Deciding the optimal endpoint, the duration, the patient population, and, of course, the combination and comparator arms are critical in order to make your trial successful, but also appealing to physician and payers alike.